From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 694, Business Continuity with guest Sonia Cuff, recorded Saturday, April 11th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio, the special pandemic edition we're putting out on Fridays. In this next episode, I'm bringing back one of my favorites, Sonia Cuff, who connects in person and online with worldwide IT communities on behalf of Microsoft. And she's a senior cloud ops advocate on the Azure engineering team. Sonia's role is to educate, empower, and upskill communities, capture feedback on how to make Microsoft Azure better. Not a lot of in-person going on right now.
No, the upcoming schedule for my flights is looking extremely bare, much to the surprise of myself and my family, who are actually quite enjoying having mum home.
This is the first time in more than 10 years I have no outstanding flights, and I kind of don't know what to do with myself, but except there's plenty to focus on. You know, it's not like there's any lack of work. We're just doing it more remotely.
Yeah, the good news is that my expense claims are really easy to do every month.
That's interesting. That's an upside you didn't expect.
It's all right.
So your family as well, are you guys coping? You're in Australia?
Yeah. Look, Australia is in a somewhat restricted state at the moment. Mm-hmm. We're not as severe as New Zealand with their lockdowns, but things like the kids are doing school remotely from home. We're not allowed gatherings of anybody out in the public, and they do have some rules around why you're allowed to be outside of your house. We've got restaurants closed, gyms are closed, all of those kind of things too. So strange times, but we're getting there, and we're actually seeing it reflecting in our numbers. We've gone 3 days in a row with zero new COVID-19 cases.
Oh, so how wonderful.
It definitely does seem to be working. Of course, the conversation now is switching to what does it look like coming out of this? How do we safely loosen those restrictions?
And so the hospital loads aren't too high, because that's where we are in Vancouver now, is that our hospitals are only about 50%, and they're starting to talk about doing elective surgeries again.
Yeah, look, we're in the same position. The state that I'm in is bigger than the state of Texas, if you want some sort of geography to it. Mm-hmm. And last I heard, we only had 12 cases in intensive care.
Wow.
So it's not the overwhelm that we thought, probably because, you know, like Y2K, of all the measures that we did put in place to try and prevent this.
The right things going on. I was born in New Zealand, even though to a Canadian father, and so I got both citizenship. So I'm a Jacinda fan. I happened to be in New Zealand when she got elected. And there was much consternation too. She's very young. But you see a few news stories around, it's like consistently the leaders that have done very well worldwide, they're the women. And Jacinda especially, it's also that the population sort of saying, oh, this is the right thing to do, then we're doing it.
Yeah, I love how strong she's been. Mm-hmm. You know, her steps have always been timely, and they've been very definitive. I do have a bit of a rivalry with my New Zealand friends, though, who tell me that that Australia should be following New Zealand's lead and doing exactly what New Zealand are doing. And one of the things we had to take into account is New Zealand is very small.
They have
just over 4 million people in their country and an economy that is much smaller. And Australia has 26.4 million people and a state government structure. So I don't know that it's a direct one-to-one translation, but you've got to give her kudos just for her leadership style.
Well, right? And I fell for her after the Christchurch disaster. She was amazing with that too. And that was utterly horrible. And it seemed so long ago, and it wasn't.
But that's my hometown.
Is it really? Christchurch? Yeah. My goodness. Christchurch is one of those cities I weep for after the earthquakes. I mean, everything. It's taken a lot. And it's still going. The folks that are down there are astonishing.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Well, I'm glad you're back. It happens to be we're recording the show on April 23rd, which means everything we've talked about the state of the pandemic is incorrect because it's a month later when this publishes, for better or worse. But it's also when your show that we recorded before all this happened about migrating from Server 2008 to 2019, which we recorded in I think early February before the pandemic had really hit the West. It's not that long ago. It seems longer ago. And certainly the topics are different. Folks are focused on different things now.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even in the last month or two, it just feels like years. Like we're in a very different world back then, weren't we?
Yeah. Yesterday was a very long year. That's true. I'm glad I know that business continuity has been a regular part of your work. How do you talk about this with IT folks? Because do you see it as an IT responsibility? What's the normal business continuity driver? Because I would think like CFO.
Okay. So the first word in that acronym is business.
Right.
It kind of gives you a bit of a hint.
Yeah. So all the IT people are like, what? That's not my problem.
And I know that we tend to run to the things we know in the areas of our responsibility. And sure. So when I say to an IT person about business continuity, they automatically think about more like things like high availability and disaster recovery and how do I keep systems running, right? Because that is our area of the business.
And our responsibilities most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's really got to be in conjunction with those business goals. It's like you don't even go and plan your disaster recovery without figuring out things like your recovery point objectives and your recovery time objectives, which are all based on business needs. So if we're not having that conversation first about what the business needs from a business continuity perspective, we failed right out of the gate.
Sure.
So the interesting thing in these times is all of the little factors that go into why we're needing to be in a business continuity situation. And, you know, I don't know how many people actually had global pandemic and is one of the factors of how they were going to need to reorchestrate their workforce to keep their business running, because that in essence is what business continuity is.
It wasn't on my list, Sonia, not at all.
And there's
no excuse, right? Like it's obvious this has always been the threat, but I don't know of many organizations that have really planned in.
Yeah, that's right. So go back and have a look at your BCP plans. You might have been thinking about things like a cyber attack on your business or a massive infrastructure failures or a fire at your main site. Like those kind of things we tend to think about when we're talking about BCP and DR. Not things like this massive shift in our workforce. And I get some confusing comments on my LinkedIn profile sometimes because I also am involved in disaster recovery and disaster response from an actual like natural disaster perspective.
Oh, interesting.
With some of the volunteering work that I do. So the streams do cross a little bit. But it's one of the things that we talk about in that particular arena is we're really good at planning for the last disaster we had.
Always. Without a doubt. Yeah.
And so something happens on an airplane and suddenly we're all taking off our shoes when we walk through TSA.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really good at putting those roadblocks in place for the last thing that happened. And that's probably why this particular thing has taken us completely by surprise in more ways than one. It's something that we didn't think we needed to plan for. And now we very much know the things that we need to start building and looking at to keep our businesses running when so many things have changed.
Yeah, very interesting. So if I'm in the IT role and because I have a backup strategy, and presumably I have a DR strategy and so forth, I may or may not have ever set those things up with a lot of business conversation in the first place. It almost sounds like I have to get on the phone with the business leadership, whoever that may be, and sort of talk through these scenarios now, if I haven't already done it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not only different for different businesses, but it is different because of the situation that we're finding ourselves in now, right? It's not just that people are needing to work from home. It's customers maybe can't get to us, it's supply chains are broken, or shipping times are massively delayed, or the flow-on effects of this particular thing across so many different related components of our supply chains, and you know, how our customers interact with us has really made this unique. And so it's really important to get a good definition from the businesses that you're serving about what's important to them right now, what's absolutely critical that keeps functioning. We've seen something similar happen with our postal service over here in Australia. And so what they found, for example, is less people are posting letters, more people are buying online and getting packages.
Right.
And so they, business continuity for them now doesn't look like how do we keep the same level of service across everything we do. Business continuity for them now is how can we shift our model so that we maybe reduce the number of times in a week that we deliver letters to people's letterboxes, but we shift that workforce into the package and the parcel delivery, and we can help cope with the demand and ramp up getting parcels and packages out to people.
That's an interesting thought. So to cut services in some area, you know, this is very much a conversation I had with Richard Hicks last week, right, talking about when you're using virtual VPNs, that you can provision more VMs to scale that VPN, even at the expense of other VPNs, because they're probably not under as much load. Folks aren't in the office. So you have the resources. You can't necessarily buy new machines. You can shift these workloads around.
Yeah. So and it's number one, I guess, is don't assume that the definition of continuity for the business looks like what you thought it was going to look like.
Sure. I mean, that being said, make sure your backups work. Like, that is, there's no point in making them if they don't work. But, you know, I think in terms of the number of times I've had the conversation during a disaster where the business's understanding of backup and the reality of the backup, we're not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That granularity period of, okay, well, today's work is lost. Why is today's work lost? Well, we had backups. Yes, we do them every day. The last one was last night. You know, that conversation is an interesting moment, and it shouldn't be found out when things are broken.
No, that's right. And look, that's a conversation that we have with anybody looking to put workloads in the cloud.
Mm-hmm. It's
okay, so let's talk about the shared responsibility model. Whose responsibility is it for data backups? Well, it's kind of both, right?
Right.
We, as a cloud provider, has a responsibility to make sure that data physically sitting on hard drives in its data center has a level of resilience and redundancy. If something happens and it has SLAs to its customers and it needs to recover from that. However, a business also has to identify things like their RPO and their RTO to figure out how much data they can afford to lose from any given point in time, mm-hmm, to then supplement what backup things that they need to put in place to be able to restore, not only on a more granular level of time, but on a more granular level of data.
Mm-hmm.
Does the cloud provider back up the entire database instance, for example, and yet when you have someone that you found out that a worker's deleted a couple of really important records that you need to get back, you don't want to be restoring the whole database instance.
Sure, and taking everything down while you do it.
Yeah, exactly. So conversations like that, you know, do fall between both parties when you're looking at putting things in the cloud as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great conversation to have. And this is probably the right time to be having it too, because it does feel like everybody's systems feel a little brittle right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's interesting because IT people are used to fighting the biggest and the most important fire.
Sure. Yeah.
And there are lots of things that we know that we should do. There are lots of things that we'd like to do that we never get time to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have this very long should-do pile, and it quite often gets put aside because we're humans and we've got capacity.
And yeah. So, and that which is urgent tends to sometimes overwhelm that which is important.
What an absolutely, yeah. It's
to that quote matrix, Stephen Covey, right? Well, sure. Yeah. You know.
And so we've gone straight into reactive mode, as we should, to make sure that our businesses are supported, say, from a remote working perspective, for example, and all those things. And most IT pros do also have one hand back on the checking the backup reports, making sure that it's still business as usual for those systems.
Yeah.
But you're right, if something drastic were to happen right now, this is not the time to be finding out that your backups haven't been working for the last 2 months.
Yeah, for sure. And when, while business is feeling quite so fragile, we don't need another blow. It should not come from us. I also think that we're in a position with the superpowers we have in technology to help the business go forward. And so, you know, provided that we're doing our jobs to keep things stable, we can take and open new doors for the business, stand up that new e-commerce site, improve customer interaction online because the in-person isn't working anymore. Like that, I'd hope we're going to be able to spend more cycles on that and less on the fires that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we are leaders in this because of how technology savvy we are. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to enable a workforce to be able to connect remotely,
mm-hmm.
and it's another thing to be able to improve their skills of using technology, because they're having to interact with their colleagues and with their customers in ways that they possibly haven't before.
Right.
And It's little things. Like, I showed somebody the other day how to upload a PowerPoint presentation to Microsoft Teams so that they can present it and still see the chat. They're not doing a full screen share.
Oh, right. Yes, of course.
And the attendees can independently move backwards and forwards through the slides if the presenter allows that. And it's kind of one of those little, you know, power user tips that I use all the time when I'm presenting that not a lot of people know. So there's a huge amount of scope in that for our IT workers to help lead in that end user, really that end user adoption and upskilling phase, whether or not you're releasing a few tips every now and again, or just in the course of talking to someone on a support call, you wrap it up with, you know, are there any other applications that you're using quite often? Can I show you some tips on this? You know, just going a little bit of that extra mile to give people a boost in how they're working, because they'll naturally run to what they know.
Sure.
And because they're trying to keep their jobs running and complete all their tasks, they don't have time to go and learn anything new right now. But if we can take those little moments, those little touch points to inject a couple of tips and tricks into their day, then by stealth, we're going to help improve the productivity of that workforce.
And Sonia, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. Your users are working remotely, and the bad guys know it. New phishing attacks are already landing in the inboxes of your users. Are those machines as protected as they would be if they were on-prem? If their machine catches ransomware, how fast can you get it fixed? Don't be the IT admin who could have done something but didn't. Block the badness and prevent business continuity problems at the source by using Policy Pack on your remote work Windows 10 machines. With Policy Pack, you get the power to manage applications and browsers on Windows 10, overcome application UAC prompts, block unknownware, dynamically configure the Windows 10 start screen, taskbar, and file associations. As a bonus, you can use Policy Pack to deliver any real on-prem group policy and group policy preferences settings to your remote work machines for the security and configuration they need. Learn how thousands of other admins enhance their remote work scenarios. Come to policypack.com/remotework to learn more. That's policypack.com/remotework. Policy Pack, securing your standards. And listeners to this podcast are eligible to win a free copy of the Cybex Wiley book entitled MDM, Fundamental Security in the Modern Desktop, using Intune, Autopilot, and Azure to manage, deploy, and secure Windows 10 by Jeremy Moskowitz, Enterprise Mobility MVP. Simply pick Run As Radio in the dropdown when you visit policypack.com/remotework. Good luck, and we hope you win. And we're back. It's Run As Radio, Pandemic Edition. And that's Sonia Cuff. I'm Richard Campbell, talking a bit about the role of business continuity. And I really am latching onto this idea that it's not just about the outages and the backups. It's also about really productivity, that part of continuity is people being able to work. And with everyone sort of at less than optimal performance, not only because of the stress of the situation we're in, but because maybe they're not used to working from home and they don't have all the right tools or all the right techniques, it sounds like we have to make some time for learning here, or they're not going to improve.
Yeah, and it is a really hard thing to do. I think one of the skills that everybody needs right now that we don't often get time to flex our muscles on is just that innovation of being able to do what we can with what we've got to a certain point. And I think the good part about this situation, because it's affected so many people, though, is there is this feeling amongst people that good enough is good enough.
Yeah.
Right. And so we're not expecting you to dial into a meeting from home with a pristine environment and zero interruptions and your dog not barking. And if you work for a kind of organization that does expect all that, I'd be looking for another job.
Yeah.
But I honestly do think that our expectations of we are all trying the best we can with what we've got, with the constraints that we're facing, and usually with a bunch of other family members in our house at the same time right now. So, yeah, so that's a lot more okay.
And you certainly see that. Like, there's been a real warmth to when the cat walks across the picture. It's not an interruption. It's pet time for a few minutes. And that a little chaos from some young people is a positive thing. And you know, they are joyful noises, as chaotic as they might be. But I think there's also an element here of we can be more productive, that we shouldn't be holding our breath waiting for this to pass before we really get down to work, that we need to improve, and that irrelevant of how or irrespective of how long this takes, we are making progress. We're getting work done.
Yeah, and a big part of that, as well as, you know, the IT pro enabling the workforce to make sure that they've got the tools that they need and the access they need to do their jobs and to access things securely, does go into that realm of how else are we helping our business with some of the tools and techniques that they could possibly be using to get used to being a remote worker. And I know that there is absolutely the perspective that this isn't just a normal day for a remote worker either.
Right.
So we are trying to handle a bunch of other circumstances in our own lives that do impact our productivity. And I certainly have seen the difference between the work I do now and the work I was doing remotely beforehand.
Just a couple of months ago, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm totally with you.
Things like how do we keep teams connected? How do we guide ways that people can have visibility of work efforts between one person and another? Mm. What sort of technology tools do we have access to in our business, or can we stand up to help with that communication between our teams? Because they're used to tapping each other on the shoulder or standing in a meeting room together, and they don't have that right now.
Yeah.
And don't just tell me that a remote meeting every day is the answer.
No, I'm big on the water cooler chat too. It's like, where do we have the casual conversation as well? But I really like this issue, and I think it is a continuity issue of visibility of work. Because there's good tools for that. Like, Teams is remarkably good at letting you know when someone else on your team is finishing something, what they're working on. Like, tying that stuff together is really interesting. I just, you know, I'm not presuming everyone uses Teams the same way or that they're all there yet. But that idea that work has to be visible, I love it. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, on a different level, if you want to look at a perspective from a different industry, we're managing at the moment schooling at home.
Right.
And the school has been very good at sending out a daily email of the tasks that need to be completed, much like you might get a list of tasks from work that you know you need to get done that day. But I have a 10-year-old daughter who's struggling a little bit with not having the time constraints of the school environment.
Right. No bell.
And so, yeah. So when she's in the classroom, she has a teacher who is moving one group of children on the same subject through a day. And when they get to a point where that particular thing has ended, they end it and they move on to something else. And that might be a different specialist teacher or a different room completely. And so from a school perspective, they have decided for the primary school students, because of the environment we're in right now, not to try and enforce that structure so much for parents to enforce in a school day. And my daughter's actually struggling with that a little bit. She likes to do tasks well, and so she will spend as long as she can have on a particular task, and she's getting a little bit behind in some of her work. And I think that mirrors quite nicely with our remote workforce, especially if you're not a remote worker. There are ways that you interact with people. There are constraints that you have. There are check-in points that you have in person in the office that you don't have to the same degree when we're remote working at the moment. And so it certainly is a different mode that we're all getting used to.
Yeah, I think who was it that said that first? And no art is ever finished, only abandoned. Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, that there's always work you can put into something and put more time into this. Everything can be improved a bit, and you literally have to have it taken from you to stop it, which I think is every piece of software I've ever worked on in my life. don't take my baby. You're shipping. I'm sad. But it's interesting to see that personality come out, that how we count on structure. So I'm sure it equally applies to folks that are at work at from home. Like, again, the structure is removed. And so how you cultivate your day and how you plan all those things, these are all productivity hits.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that productivity impacts the results for the business, right? And
sure.
The business continuity and keeping all of those deliverables going.
Yeah, being able to see all of those things. I'm also thinking of other tools that we've used in dev routinely, stuff like Trello and things that are really work visibility tools. They are commitments to tasks, where those tasks are at, and how they're impacting other work. Like the Kanban board style of effort, which typically you wouldn't bother with in a lot of other work environments outside of development, because you know folks talk about it over lunch or they talk about it at coffee, and so you see that synchronicity. Here it might be easier to actually start setting up those kinds of tools, just so that we do define a workflow really well that has multiple people depending on it, and people can see at a glance who's I'm the blocker now. People are waiting on my work. And so I'll also get support when I'm realizing, hey, stuff's going to back up behind me if I don't get help with X.
Yeah, and I love you brought that up. So in our team in particular, we've started using an Azure DevOps board, just like a Kanban board with the different columns in it and the different work items and the different status on things. And the interesting thing is that in my team, we do some pieces of work together, but we also, the majority of my work is more individual effort and doesn't necessarily rely on someone else within my team. It's more likely to connect with someone, say, in a product group or a team outside of mine. But using Azure DevOps as a Kanban style board has raised the level of visibility, not only of my boss having impact to see what I'm working on, but I'm able to see what my colleagues are working on. And it's one of those tools that we'll take forward post-pandemic. It's working really well for us. And the other nice little benefit of that is when it comes to performance review time, it's a lot easier for me to go through that list of what I have done in any given period to write up the impact that I've had for my performance review as well. So I think you're right. We are kind of forced into this age of looking a little bit differently about how we work, but there are some options, especially maybe in the productivity tool space, that will carry on benefiting us after life goes back to whatever our normal is.
And we're not talking about building code here using a Kanban board. This is about any kind of project.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've got blog posts and videos I record and things that I plan out, and all of that's on there. There's not a single piece of code development going on in my world, trust me.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, because again, you think of the average Azure DevOps space as how we help devs get code deployed and, again, resolve blocking and so forth, because so much of that is individual work, but still with relationship between them. But the fact that we could really apply to almost anything, and there's such good tools that likely you already own if you're living in the Azure world as it is, like,
maybe licensed for them already.
You may already have a license for this. That's all. You could make a business card just around that alone. Let me figure out what it is you already own and aren't using yet or aren't really taking advantage of. Because I think that's really a great insight to provide those boards. And then it actually reduces friction for a lot of other work.
Yeah, it certainly does.
I've often used the line with software developers that, you know, every interruption represents hours of delay. And so, you can't grow a plant by yanking out of the ground to see how the roots are doing. So what I always liked about Kanban boards and these kinds of tools is they were non-interrupting ways to show progress.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that. And I find personally that it helps me stay focused.
Right.
And you know what to work on. In amongst the child needing help with their schoolwork or the you know, the distractions on social media about what the government have just said about the lockdowns or all the things that are going on right now, I just keep going back to that Azure DevOps board and going, okay, these are the things I've committed to. Right now I know, for example, that maybe I have a 30-minute window of opportunity where I know that I've got no interruptions and everything's ticking over nicely. What on that board can I progress given that that time frame that will help make an impact? And I don't know about you, but I'm finding sort of a really big increase on people asking me to do stuff in this time. And in my role, it's not necessarily, you know, stuff that needs to happen to stand up the IT capability for a business right now, but requests for articles, requests for virtual events, requests for, you know, being involved in a lot of things right now really does take me back to looking at my board and going, okay, I've actually got quite a bit on my plate at the moment. I think there's probably some things I need to start saying no to because I've got a great productivity line about the fact that I'm very good at saying yes based on whether I'm capable of doing something.
Right.
Not necessarily whether I have the capacity to do something.
Yeah. When? When? How did you ask me about when? When's a different question altogether. Yeah, funny. That was this week was the week where I felt like I have said yes to too many things now and my week is going, is getting out of control. Which is interesting because a lot of the things that they're being asked for now, they're not fixed schedule items. They almost don't have deadlines. When you have time, could you make X? Those kinds of things. And so to be able to manage that somewhat amorphous list of demands. And then make sure you can get things done at a reasonable length of time, know what's been waiting the longest, and know why it's been waiting that long. These are all tools, I think, that would really help with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got another interesting story to put in more from the tech side of business continuity.
Okay.
My husband is an IT manager for a veterinary hospital, and they have servers at one site and not at another,
that
a VPN between the two. Fairly standard for a small business, right? He primarily works at the second site because that's where the business manager is, and he has those conversations at the desk normally when he's not working from home like he is now. But they've put an edict down that because they are still really medical staff, even though they're dealing with animals and not humans, that staff are not allowed to travel between one site to the other site.
And, because of the pandemic, they don't want to do cross-contamination.
Correct. Yeah, they want to absolutely reduce any chance of someone getting affected and spreading it to that second site. And so he's now lost physical access to his servers.
Interesting.
And it's kind of interesting because it's almost like he's put them in the cloud and he can't touch them anymore. Right?
Yeah,
in somebody else's data center.
That's crazy. So,
and for the most part, that's okay because they're working and we're used to doing all of our remote admin and our troubleshooting remotely when we've got that access. If it's not a network problem and if it's not that the hardware's on fire and we can actually still, you know, get a heartbeat out of the thing and connect to it, it's all good. But I don't ever think that he would have put in his business continuity plan that he may have to recover a server that he normally has physical access to that now he doesn't.
Right. Well, and I guess he could commit to the other office. He just can't go back to the first office if he does.
Yeah, it's interesting. So the workaround, and it's a completely valid option, is surgical scrubs.
Oh.
And so he is allowed to go and visit the site that is not normally his primary site as long as he gowns up like one of the surgeons with the mask and all the scrubs to reduce the risk of contaminating that site that he doesn't normally go to. So it's an interesting little story in terms of thinking outside of the box because when we do these BCP plans, there are usually quite a few assumptions in there about what we will have access to that now have kind of just gone out of the window.
Yeah, and they're not common scenarios, but they're not unprecedented scenarios, especially when you think about a veterinary clinic. Like there could easily have been an outbreak of something that's hazardous to humans that could cut you off from that office while they clean it up. So, I mean, those things exist. It's a whole, you know, we're going to overreact to viruses in our BCP plannings going forward, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Because we'll plan for this disaster going forward in the future. Oh. And guess what? I hate to tell you this, but the next virus we have will possibly not look like this one either.
But whatever the next significant disaster will be something different again.
Exactly.
I'm sure, without a doubt. Well, I'm glad you and your family are well, and thanks for the insight. I really appreciate these thoughts around business continuity.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.